This is our last program of the year at the Alaska Public Radio Network, and like other news organizations, before launching into a new year, we'd like to take a last look at the old one, with the idea that if we know where we've been, we may have some insight into where we are going. But after looking over the things we reported on in the state of Alaska in 2010, APRN's Steve Heimel says at this point we may know that our direction has changed, but that does not mean we necessarily know where we are headed.
If Alaska were a 51-year-old person instead of a state, it might be said that it was having a midlife crisis. We come out of the year 2010 a very different state from the one that went into it, but it may take a while to sort out what that means. Take the election, for instance. You would have thought incumbent Republican U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski to be a shoo-in for re-election, but there were forces of discontent in the state, and come the August primary, she was defeated by Joe Miller, one of a raft of what became known as Tea Party candidates across the nation seeking to reform and shrink the federal government. But this is Alaska. It didn't end there. An unprecedented write-in campaign with a big financial boost from the Native corporations did indeed succeed.
We did. We made history. Alaskans made history. And doesn't it just feel wow?
But what will become of the political forces that almost toppled Murkowski is very much an open question. Alaska's former governor, Sarah Palin, now a national celebrity, backed Miller and a number of other reform candidates. Her support in her home state may be eroded somewhat, but when she came back for a 9/11 public appearance with talk radio host Glenn Beck, long lines of people were willing to pay the price and stand in the cold during the security checks, looking at protesters, bearing signs.
What I'm hoping is that over time, those people who have them on such a pedestal will come out of denial.
Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin believe what they say. There are people who say Glenn Beck, conservative, and they add a lot of baggage to that, which isn't true.
In the year 2010, the lives of two of the most important figures in Alaska's first 50 years of statehood came to their ends. Twice Governor Wally Hickel, who, as he wished, was buried standing up so he could come out fighting. And then, in early August, word came that an airplane flying out of a fishing lodge in Bristol Bay had crashed into a mountain. Former Senator Ted Stevens was aboard that plane and did not survive, along with four others. The magnitude of this was such as to draw the chairwoman of the National Transportation Safety Board, Deborah Herzman, to the state to join the investigation.
They estimated that there was about a 100-yard gash leading up the hillside as the plane traveled up the hillside and then came to rest.
Poor visibility was the likely cause of the crash. Indeed, while any year will see fatal plane crashes in Alaska, there were a large number of them in 2010, and a state investigation pointed to weather as a frequent factor. But not in the case of a giant C-17 military cargo jet that crashed after taking off from Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, killing all three aboard. Pilot error, the investigation said. Alaska saw an extremely unusual death from a wolf attack. A young teacher out running at Chignik Lake was apparently pulled down by wolves and killed. Later in the year, across the Alaska Peninsula at Port Moeller, a number of wolves were killed by the Fish and Game Department when they started nabbing household pets. An avalanche early in the year took the life of Jim Bowles, the president of ConocoPhillips Alaska, when he was out skiing. There were deaths as well of some military personnel returned to Alaska bases from combat, and the number of deaths among the homeless in Anchorage near double digits for the second year. In Hoonah, two police officers were ambushed and killed. John Marvin Jr. was arrested. Terrorism came to Alaska with the surprising arrest of a King Salmon weatherman and his wife for putting together a hit list of public figures for assassination. As the decade ends, prospects are mixed for Alaska's relationship with the federal government. Republican Governor Sean Parnell was easily elected to the office he succeeded to when Sarah Palin quit. He's looking at an Alaska without the largesse and protection of Ted Stevens, diminishing oil production, uncertain gas line prospects, and the likelihood of the lower 48 recession lingering over the 49th state, all the time Parnell saying he wants job creation.
And when I think about jobs, I think about economic growth, and I think about the federal government, for example, and whether they are diminishing our opportunities for economic growth.
By year's end, Parnell had lawsuits pending against the federal government on health care reform, fishery curtailments, and several endangered species actions. and a huge uncertainty about offshore oil and gas drilling in the Arctic Ocean after the catastrophic blowout of the Deepwater Horizon in the Gulf of Mexico. Not only did that spill exceed the Exxon Valdez, but it prompted changes in federal offshore oil and gas policy and has also caused the oil and gas industry to step back and take another look at itself and the risks it's taking. The high price of crude oil continues to provide the capital for exploration and development, but how much in Alaska and its waters is very much unknown as the year 2011 begins and Alaska continues to navigate into its next 50 years. I'm Steve Heimel.